Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Okay.
50 minutes.
Are we recording it twice?
Yes.
Are we recording? Yeah, I am recording this twice because I am an incessant backer-upper.
And I
back up all my stuff on the cloud a couple times. I've got a network hard drive at home. I've got a regular time capsule hard drive.
You're constantly backing that thing up.
Was that song written about you?
Yeah. It really was. We're talking with John Hamm is here.
Yeah, that's me.
John Hamm. Hey. Bearded John Hamm.
You can't see that. It's on the radio.
I don't understand how radio works.
It's not the radio.
It's not the radio. It's the internet.
With the mind's eye. Yeah, radio's dead.
But imagine, if you will, me, like I look in regular life, but just with more hair on my face.
Well, I don't understand. Could you walk me through that? Listen, I'm a network executive. I can't picture things in my brain.
Go back to the first thing I said. Imagine me, regular me.
Okay, I got that picture.
Fine. Now, if... Here's a better way to do it.
Okay.
Remember those games where you used to move the little iron filings around with the magnet?
I'm sorry. My parents didn't let me have toys. That's why I became an executive.
I always just put hair on his head.
Oh...
Everybody at home, look down at your genitals. See the big pubic area? That's very, very furry. Imagine that on my face. A good example.
Wow. Yours specifically. You at home, your pubic hair specifically on John Hamm's face.
There might be some people at home who are like, I have groomed myself in the style of John Hamm. Down there. A little madman sniz.
Yeah, my pubic hair constantly has a cigarette in its mouth.
John, I first met you a couple years ago at the UCB Theater in LA, and Mad Men had already been on for a season, and I hadn't watched it yet, but everyone said it was great, and we met doing Jimmy Pardo's Match Game.
That's right.
And I said, congratulations on your show. I hear it's really good. Then I watched it, and I was like, oh, fuck, no, this is actually really one of the best shows on television. And it totally, like, just blew my mind, because you were so goddamn funny on Match Game. But you know your show is so intense that I don't think a lot of people who watch Mad Men, I mean maybe they do now because you've done SNL and you've done some other stuff, but you're genuinely funny.
Oh well, thank you.
And we kind of nerded out about comedy. So what was your did you want to be a comedian when you were younger?
No,
did you do sketch or anything?
I really didn't. I was always a fan of it, fan of the form, mm-hmm. as it were. And had watched SNL as a little kid and watched Kids in the Hall and Fridays and SCTV and
Fridays. The Michael Richards show. Yep.
Or the Stuart Pankin show.
Stuart Pankin. Melanie Chartoff. I think she was on that.
She
a lot
was
of
indeed.
The not necessarily the newscast
That's right.
came from Fridays.
It was just something to do. I was an only child. It was in the heady days before video games and internet. So you did things like watch television and listen to the radio and listen to albums. And I had a...
When you say albums, I don't understand.
try to imagine my face.
God, I don't care.
so imagine talking, my face, fresh,
wait a minute.
Flat,
so this is a,
made of vinyl.
This is a sound medium with a beard? I don't understand. Go back.
Lots right, of pops on that record.
I confuse easily. So you must have been a Steve Martin fan.
Steve Martin, sure. Steve Martin, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Bob Newhart. Yeah, there's a wild card there, a little Bob Newhart. Basically, whatever I could get from the library. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to explain libraries? Do we still have libraries?
I don't understand. Libraries?
Oh, that's right, where I read my movies.
All right, so I'm checking out your beard at a factory? God damn it.
But it was just something that I was always interested in. But the actual process of what comedians do and sitting down and writing something on purpose to be funny is mystifying to me.
You've been involved.
Alec Baldwin said something funny, like, because everybody was telling him how funny he was, how funny he is on 30 Rock, and how amazing he is, and he's like, I don't even understand it. Like, I can be funny when people write funny things for me to say, but like Tracy Morgan can be funny sitting by himself in a room. He's like, I don't have that capacity, whatever that is. So I feel a little bit of the same way. Is just that if I'm placed in a room with other funny people, I can attempt to do that, but on my own, I'm hopeless when it comes to being funny.
But also, kind of
that's hilarious.
I know.
Damn it! I did it again.
I can't help it, guys. Stop laughing. It's like some weird King Midas curse where everyone just laughs at everything. No, seriously, I'm having a stroke. It's hilarious.
The Emperor's new funny, hilarious clothes.
You guys don't smell toast? I smell toast. But also, I've got some big news for you because you know, when I emailed you and I said, hey, do you want to come do the podcast? You said, sure, if you get me a copy of Red Dead Revolver. John, my exciting news is that I have not found that for you.
That's weird. You can't find a video game from 8 years ago? It's so weird because usually those things just last forever and ever. They don't change every year. They don't...
Why do you want the old one? Why do you don't want the new one?
It was basically, again, getting back to my point of me not being funny. That was the funniest video game title I could come up with on very short notice.
I want that popular game. all right.
Now Red Dead Revolver is going to be like, John Hamm's favorite, Red Dead Revolver. Yeah. This is going to be your face.
Get those stickers made. Shiny stickers.
But, we talked about this briefly, but I had to give up video games.
I think we all had to give up video games at some point.
It was either that or do things in life. Yeah, and I just, you know, I found myself in a position where I'm at auditions and I'm like, I got to get home and finish Wild Arms. And so I was just blowing auditions.
Yeah, we were just saying when you start rejoicing in the fact that you didn't get a job because it means you'll have more time to play Halo.
Yep.
I cut back on video games really early on because I had a string throughout my entire life.
Oh, you're going to say you had a stroke.
A stroke playing Tetris.
Don't call attention to
intense.
It. No, Joni, your face just looks a little melty on one side. You're fine.
But throughout my life, I got the wrong system. Like when the handhelds came out, I didn't get Game Boy. I got Atari Lynx. Sure. And then when the disk drive game systems came out, I didn't get PlayStation. I got Panasonic 3DO.
Sure.
And then when the next generation of the 32-bit, I got Sega Saturn.
Sure.
So I failed.
You were back in the wrong horse.
Every time. So I never trust myself when wanting to buy electronics. I always got the wrong thing.
No. I'm not going to bet on Japanese electronics. You come to me and tell me that the Swiss are making a watch. And you've got my money.
Defending your life.
Defending your life. Yes. Defending your life. I love that movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
One of the best movies
ever made.
I saw it in the theater and it blew me away. I mean, I was in college, just from being a comedy nerd, I didn't relate to other kids that well. So it was very difficult as like a freshman or sophomore in college to try to convince other kids to be like, let's go see Defending Your Life. I want to go see Albert Brooks. You know, Albert Brooks, Comedy Minus One. Blank. Nothing. Oh, this is why I don't get invited to parties.
Will there be boobs?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, yes.
You might see Rip Torn's boobs.
The boobs are under a tupa, which is what they call their dead gowns.
At this point is a
gowns.
Risk anywhere. You might see Rip Torn's boobs.
You don't know. He might pull them out at a bank thinking it's his house. You don't know where you're going to see Rip Torn's tits. You never know. RipTornsTits.gov.
Check them out.
Somebody told me a story about Rip Torn on the set of Larry Sanders that he honestly uttered these words about Janine Garofalo.
That Janine Garofalo, I'll bet her pussy smells fantastic.
But it's Rip Torn. I hope Janine doesn't hear this podcast.
There's a couple ways to go about criticizing that comment. One is that, well, it's actually quite a nice thing to say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. It's like, a compliment.
It's not like he was saying that I bet it smells terrible.
Right, right, right. I bet it smells like a dumpster near a pier.
But to be honest, though, I'd imagine Rip Torn's the kind of guy that does want a smelly vagina. He does seem like the kind of guy, it was great. It smelled like horse shit.
It's a turnoff to him, right? Yeah. It smells fantastic.
You're so well
Too bad.
So well kept.
You know when you leave a steak in the shed for a couple of days?
No.
That's kind of the experience.
No one does that.
Torn. Yeah. No one knows that.
The shed you keep out behind your bank.
In your shed?
Yeah, I got a steak shed out back.
Ah, keep them drying.
That's how you got to eat your meat.
I don't believe in refrigeration.
You guys have seen this clip on the internet, I'm assuming, of Rip Torn and Norman Mailer.
No.
Fist fight?
No.
What?
Well, that's amazing.
YouTube it. It's funny. It's from the 70s.
They've
so they're,
actually
they're all
fist
like
fight?
Hale and healthy. Yeah, and it's at like a picnic. And there are children there.
At a picnic.
Oh my God. Rip Torn, the first
like
viral video.
Yeah. In a fist fight.
With Norman Mailer.
It's got sound and everything. So somebody was there with a Super 8 camera, filming it with a microphone. It was not as easy as now.
God damn it! Now that's the 70s for you. When Norman Mailer and Rip Torn were getting a fist fight. Not now, when it's a bunch of fucking mouth breathing unibrow dudes jumping off their sheds in the backyard.
On purpose. That's the lifeblood of our show, Chris.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to attack our entire demographic and money resource for Web Soup. Tagging all that. There's another. Someone else was working on a show that Robert Stack was working on, and they were kind of in line behind him at craft service. And just out loud to himself as he was scooping vegetables on his plate, he just kind of said to himself, "Ah, broccoli, broom of the lower intestines." These guys are great.
Again, not false.
Not false at all.
No. Maybe.
I'll bet this broccoli's pussy smells fantastic.
See, I would bet it smells like broccoli.
Rip Stack. That just matches. Yeah. It just smells like broccoli.
Not that great.
Broccoli puss. So, what's it? I mean, you're basically... You must be working on your dream job. I mean, like, when you're a young actor... You just kind of want to work, and it doesn't really matter what you work on, because you just want to work.
I've certainly had those jobs.
I've seen your IMDb page. I know you were...
Plenty of those.
That's right around the time I met you. Because I remember I met you waiting in line to go see, I think maybe it was a Bart Coleman pilot. It was the Super Happy Fun Game Bomb thing.
Yeah, it was the sort of fake argument show.
Yeah, right? Yeah, Crossballs. Yeah, yeah. And then,
Crossballs.
Yeah, we met it like just outside of the production.
Waiting in line on La Brea.
No, it was Vine.
Vine.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you just went over.
Hey guys, don't fight. Don't get all Rip Torn and Norman Mailer. That's what we're fighting
about. Delightful, John.
I said Vine. No, it was Fountain.
But yeah, like I remember, you were on your bike and you rode away, and then I asked John, Tall John. I was like, "Oh, what does John do?" He's like, "He's an actor." I was like, "Ah, I hope it works out for him." Though I didn't know it was. It was currently working out for
you. That was very nice of you, though, to put that out to the universe.
I tried. That's so nice. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Jonah's a star maker.
We just brought you here to thank Jonah.
See,
we're waiting.
The year 2004. Me and John Hamm on Vine or La Brea. It's up for debate.
I love the fact that I got on my bike.
Yeah, you're on a bike.
I was healthy then.
although
riding a bike in Hollywood in the summer is probably like the worst thing you could do.
Yeah. You know, now that your career is going so well, you should drive around on a tandem bike with a chauffeur in the front and just kind of kick your back.
Edward?
Yes. Yes, sir.
To the Jamba Juice.
All right, Mr. Hamm. I made that chauffeur British because I didn't want to be racially intimidated.
Kind of British.
Would you get a British chauffeur?
You don't like my British accent.
I'm from England.
So much Doctor
Sharon Osbourne.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. To your point, I guess yeah, it is. It's a great job, but it is the most recent in a string of many jobs that weren't as great. So you know, it's a long road. I mean, I would imagine it's similar being a comic to. Sort of like, there are those nights you're going to play the Chuckle Hut in, you know, wherever, Sioux Falls,
right.
South Dakota, and mm-hmm. you go like, well, here it is. Here we are. I guess I guess we're going to do the best we can and move on. So,
right.
Ideally, it's an upward progression, and you know, but it's like anything else. I guess it's. I remember this is one of the first times I didn't meet you, but I had seen you live. Was at Largo many years ago, and you know those shows were like you and Patton and Paul F and Sarah Silverman and Tenacious D and Zach and all these guys who are now, you know. Blown up.
Yeah, they're all doing really well. I'm on a third-tier basic cable channel.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I first started doing comedy in, like, 2002, right before, there was a show at iOS that Patton put together called Pricks, Punks, Perverts, and People. No, Matt Besser put together. Every week, it was the same lineup. It was Matt Besser, Danielle Schneider, David Koechner, Jerry Minor, Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn. And that was every week, and I was one of three people in the show, like in the audience.
For $5.
No, it was a free show,
free,
I think.
Yeah. Largo was $5.
Yeah, it was a free show every week, and no one was ever there. And like it was like I felt like I was cheating the world. Yeah. I was like, I get to see these people every week, but I was a comedy nurse, so I knew. But
you're an early show, adopter.
If that show existed now, it could, you know, sell out the Largo every night.
So it's
you,
crazy.
You have the opposite sensibility with comics that you do with video game platforms.
That's exactly. I can
you actually pick very good ones very early.
Exactly. It's the guy who likes to be comedy honest, though, and crappy systems.
To be honest, Don't though, worry. I wish I could switch it. If I could put my stock in electronics, I think I'd be doing a little better right now.
Those Monday Night Largo shows were
it was crazy,
beyond insane. I mean, not even just getting to perform with them, but also just being able to go and see. Like the first time I ever saw Mitch Hedberg live was at one of those Largo shows.
I used to read about them living in Massachusetts, like in 2000.
How exciting that!
And I would say, when I get out there, I'm going to spend $5 and see these people.
And by that time, it was over.
Oh,
you missed it.
I saw Mitch Hedberg do this thing on stage where he was like. I never saw him do this anywhere else, but he was like, I have undertaken a writing project where I have written a spec menu. And so he just read this entire menu of food where it was like, braised short ribs and a béarnaise sauce. I am not sure I am using braised correctly in that context. Like, it was fucking amazing. That's amazing. Awesome. So,
well, it was a funny time to be there, too, because it was... Early when I started, the reason I went there is because it was cheap, and I knew a couple people, and so I eventually got to know enough people where I didn't have to stand in the ridiculously long line. I could go around the back or go, hey, can go right through. But at a certain point, it got so crowded and so crazy that it overtook the venue. So to speak. There were a couple like Tenacious D shows where like it was beyond standing room only, and it was ridiculous. So nice. It was a cool thing to be sort of. In before everyone else was hip to it.
It feels like it started over with the M-Bar shows.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, there was these great shows that barely anybody were at. And then
all of a sudden it got crazy.
And then those M-Bar shows were amazing. And
spilling
then,
out.
That's where we met.
That's where we met. Yeah. And then when Aukerman, when they opened the UCB Theater and Aukerman was like, oh, we're going to move CDR to Comedy Death Ray to UCB. I was like, no one's going to go to that.
It'll never work.
M-Bar, you can eat and you can drink and... This is not a theater culture. They're not going to go sit in a theater. Yeah. And I'm a fucking idiot because now, like, you know, almost every great show in Los Angeles happens at the UCB. Yeah. So I didn't know. I was dumb. But
So come on out. Come to the UCB Theater. Whenever you guys listening at home, get this.
John,
and it'll be over by then.
Drop your headphones.
John is still doing he's doing the Comedy World favors by appearing on every show, I think. Everyone's calling in their favorite card.
I do go a lot. I mean, I just like going. First of all, it's relatively close to my house, and it's fairly easy.
What's your address?
Situation.
I don't think anyone will...
Yeah, let me just throw that out there. It's Boulevard at beep.
Do you live in a robot?
A boulevard?
Right, wow. Your Majesty. Boulevard.
A boulevard.
Oh, with the OU. Oh, okay. Nice diphthong, jagass. How often do you get to say that in conversations? What was the last show you went to at UCB?
Last Tuesday.
Oh, you were last Tuesday show?
Yeah. Well, I got there very late, but the Sklars were there and Nick Kroll, and that's all. Those are the only people I saw, but Brody was hosting.
Brody!
Brody Stevens.
Still wearing
it. I do podcasts!
Oh my god! See, you do an impression of Brody Stevens, and now at the top of every act is going to be like, often repeated by John Hamm, Brody Stevens.
We'll find it out.
I know famous people.
It was amazing. It was about Brody. His arm is in a cast right now. And Brody does warm up for Chelsea Lately. So I just saw him. Actually, I did it with the Sklars a couple days ago. And but because he has one arm in a cast, he just had one drumstick in his back.
I saw it.
Brody is one of those guys where I heard people doing impressions of him. Like, because I started coming in 2002, and it was like shortly after I started hanging out. Like, I would hear people do Brody. It's like, you know Brody Stevens? I was like, no. They're like, you know Brody Stevens.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How come you won't have me on your podcast, but you'll talk about me in my bits?
Wait, why does he sound all wackety?
He was a megaphone singer earlier.
Thank you.
A little off an ante.
Kind of fit money machine.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man.
Do you ever, you never really did any live comedy at all?
No, not on purpose.
Because you're so great. Like, it was so fun doing Match Game. We did a bunch of Match Games.
That was a fun show. It was incredibly nerve-wracking for me, of course, because I was surrounded by people like you and Patton and Paul F. and sort of professional funny people. So the idea of, the idea of being funny on purpose for me is terrifying.
But when people see,
the bar's fairly low when you come in as like the guy from Mad Men. They're like, what's he gonna do? Like,
right.
Smolder?
You know, actually, he smoldered really well, and he was very funny.
Very funny.
Was some really funny, smoldering. Some really hot fuckable smoldering.
But that was why the idea of hosting SNL wasn't that big of a. It was terrifying in many ways, but the bar was incredibly low. It's like don't fall over. Don't run into the camera.
What was that process like? What was the SNL process like?
It's an amazingly well-oiled machine. Like you just basically try to stay out of the way. And again, I think certain hosts have more or less involvement with either the writing. I mean, I know Zach's hosting it this week. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he has more involvement with the writing just because that's what he does.
Right.
But he's hosting it last Saturday where it was really good.
Time warp!
But I sort of let them, especially the first time, let them kind of do what they want. And you meet with everybody and you meet Lauren and you meet with all the writers and then you sort of go in, meet individually and they pitch ideas and you say that would be funny or not or maybe or whatever. And Wednesday of the week, you have 50 sketches that you're going to read that they wrote, you know, the last two nights.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through like a four-hour read-through and just read all these sketches.
Oh, my God.
And it's awesome. It's at a huge table. There's like the lady at the piano playing sound effects and people bringing wigs and props and stuff in there just to kind of make it better.
Does it feel like you're on the old Sid Caesar show
it
or
does.
Something?
I mean, it really does. And plus, you're in this room on this stage on this floor of this building that has done this for 35 years. So you're sitting at the same table that, you know, everybody else sat at throughout the years. So it's kind of amazing and also a little terrifying
right.
in many ways. So it's you get to look at them first so you can be like, okay, what am I going to do with this one or what am I going to do with that
one? And as the guest, you probably get the good side of the show and not the... It's my first year writing on SNL and three of my sketches just got cut at the last minute.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Were there any sketches that during the read-through that you wanted that didn't get on?
The first time there was one that I thought was really funny called Apollo 11. I don't know if it'll ever make it on the air, but it was basically about the guys who got to go on the moon, and of course there was one dude who was left back in the capsule.
Michael Collins.
Michael Collins was left in the capsule. Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong.
That's correct.
Wrong, went out, and so it's the three dudes in the capsule saying, and the guy saying like, you know, Michael, we're really sorry. You know, we drew numbers, and this is how it works. And I'm like, I'm playing Michael Collins. No, of course you guys, this is great. You guys deserve it. I'll be back here making sure everything's great. Be safe. This will be awesome. So they go out, and it's Forte and Hader, and they're like, ah, I forgot. You're not going to believe this. What? Forgot my space helmet. Like, how am I going to go out? They're like, you're an idiot. Like, you really need to, like, get your head in the game. So they go back into the door, and it's locked. And they're like, wait, what's the deal? And they kind of shake the door, and I'm like, yeah, what do you want? And they're like, Aldrin forgot his helmet. Like, okay, let me just grab it for you. They're like, unlock the door. Let us back in. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I come in and like my spacesuit's kind of half off. I'm like, here's your helmet. Why are you guys, what are you doing? And they're like, what are you doing in there? They're like, nothing. Just go to the moon. Go to the moon. Do your thing. So they're like, okay. Slam door, locks. They're like, oh man, that was really weird. What's going on in there? Nothing. All right. Well, let's get to the moon. Okay. Oh, fuck. What? Forgot the flag. We got to put the flag on. Forgot the flag. I can't believe it. Oh, God. Well, all right. Knock, knock, knock. What? Knock, knock, knock. Armstrong, I forgot the flag. Can't we? Oh, what do you guys want? If you get the flag. Oh, yeah. I don't think you're going to want to use the flag. So believe it or not,
it got cut.
A story about an astronaut masturbating and
on the flag.
Somehow the Apollo 11 mission. Somehow didn't make it.
You know, that's not surprising to me. It's because there was a my favorite cut sketch from SNL of all time. I don't know if he ever actually made it, but this must have been like 10 years ago. I heard Robert Smigel pitched an animated. He pitched a Raid commercial, but for RU 486. So the thing was going to be, RU 486 gets down deep where babies hide. They were like, yeah, I guess we can't.
That one didn't really make it on.
It didn't really make it on. A little surprising. Sensitive. A little sensitive surprising about that.
Masturbating in space, though, that's like coming in slow motion.
It really is.
And how?
It really is.
I hear.
I don't know. I've never.
I haven't simulated it.
I've never, let's say, taken a free fall jet ride and then tried to crank one out. But let's just say hypothetically,
you got to time that shit just.
But
right.
It is weird. Like one of the ones I did on the first show was a one that got cut adrift from Brian Williams' show. They do recycle sketches that either for whatever reason don't make it through table or dress or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I've watched a couple of those ones that went up on my second time went back in various sort of repurposed versions in the next week's show. So they do reuse stuff, and if it's funny and it just doesn't work, or somebody's not killing at the table, or the host doesn't get it right, or whatever, they'll put stuff up again. But if they don't keep recycling them, like if it doesn't work like three times, it's like, yeah,
that was the thing I heard Odenkirk talking about once, where he said like that's what he hated at the time when he was at SNL, is that like Bob Odenkirk would just like. He said they would just kind of cut stuff and not really ever return to it as much as they should, or they would just try the same version of it and never rewrite it or retry it as much as they should.
And the amazing, really amazing thing of like how it works, like once you finally get your show set and then it starts getting cut or tweaked or whatever because they have to fit it into this shoebox of a stage, and there's three huge cameras moving around, an audience and all this stuff, and sets that have to move around and everything, and by the time dress happens, then they have to cut a half an hour from the show. It's because they purposely make dress rehearsal long so they can see what works and move it around and fit the pieces. It's like this crazy Tetris game where you have to fit everything into this box, and the box is 90 minutes long, and you have like 10 minutes for Weekend Update and two musical acts, and those things are blocked out and commercial time and everything. And everything else, like there could be 9 3-minute sketches. There could be 2 10-minute sketches and 3 2-minute sketches. Like, it's just crazy. And there's a lady with a little stopwatch who just, like, marks everything out, and they fit it all in there.
What I always get stomach aches thinking about is television in the 50s when sitcoms were live.
Yeah, when it was all like
I just
that.
Get fucking stomach aches thinking about, like, that was a stage production, and you could not fuck
every
it
week.
Up. Yeah. Every and at, week. Least, at least on SNL, in theory, you could kind of break the scene a little bit if you fuck up so bad. But like I Love Lucy or any of the Honeymooners or any of those, like you just could not fuck up no matter what.
Yeah, it was like go with it, and that's kind of what it is on SNL. Like there things happen, like people miss cues and somebody's wig isn't on or the quick change doesn't happen fast enough, and or like famously the who's the singer that sort of.
Sinead O'Connor?
No, that mumbled her line.
Ashley Simpson.
Ashley Simpson.
I always get Sinead and Ashley Simpson mixed up. I'm sorry, you guys. Their styles are very similar. So I was
who sort of just like, they played the wrong track and she was, whoops, and walked off stage. And they're like,
she did a jig first.
She did do a little jig.
Or when Jenny, why am I blanking on her last name? She said fuck at the top.
Oh, Jenny Slate.
Yeah, Jenny Slate. Yeah, this season.
Third person to say fuck on SNL.
Third person ever?
Yeah, Charlie Rocket, and then Norm MacDonald, and now Jenny Slate.
Oh, when did Norm say it?
Daily.
He said it. Will Ferrell did this vomiting thing where he was vomiting, and Norm grabbed the vomit.
Right.
Yeah, vomiting out of your
Norm
shirt
grabbed
sleeve.
The vomit and tasted it, and he went, ugh. And he went, the fuck was that? And that was it.
That's fantastic.
I recorded that one. I had that on tape.
If only there were some worldwide web of information from which we could go see this.
Where could I see my VHS
along
tapes?
With the Norman Mailer Rip Torn bout that took place in the 70s. You know, one sketch that could not be recycled for anyone else, John Hamm's John Hamm, which I fucking loved. And that was near the end of the show, right?
Yeah.
I think that could have been a top of show.
Well, that's up there with the Peter Sarsgaard Sarsgaard.
Written by the same, believe it or not, written by the same person. Seth Meyers unabashedly likes puns.
Yeah.
And I had going back for the second one, he's like, what do you think? Should we do another one? I'm like, I think that ship sailed. Like, what are you going to do? Like, what is there? Like a product recall? Like, what is it possibly? How deep can we?
I think that sketch is just
mine this vein. Like,
I think it's just John Hamm's John Hamm. Remember?
Right? Yeah.
Remember this one?
Every line you have is just like followed by, huh, right? From the last time?
And he came up with the ham and bubbly thing, which was very funny and killed. So I was happy to be a part of it. And Bublé did a great job. He was suitably nervous and rightfully so. I hate that guy. I'll kill him.
Wow! John Hamm throwdowns a gauntlet on Michael Bublé on the Nerdist podcast. That's all right. I don't think Bublé's ever going to come on the show. Yeah, unlikely.
Well, he actually is here right now, so let me bring him in.
Mike, hello, come on in. Everybody. Too bad there's not a Rat Pack for me to hang out with. Still banging broads.
He's engaged to be married.
Well,
how dare you?
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Michael Bublé.
Are these free throws?
Yeah. Have a water. They're for you. It's like, I don't care who I hurt. Michael Bublé. I might make a Paris Hilton joke at some point.
Man, this is the building to do it in.
Yeah, this is the... we're in the...
This feeds the monster.
We're on the E side, actually, though. The G4 and E are in the same building, along with the Style Channel, and the Sound Network and the Golf Channel, and Versus, and...
How are the Fearnet? G4 gang treated by the E and the Style gang?
It feels with like, scowls.
It feels like that is literally like a high school cafeteria.
Well, all right. I mean, like
with more cameras.
Here's what you have to understand. You know, you'll see, like when you look at the difference between the cubicles from the E side and G4 side. Like on the E side, you'll see pictures from Us Magazine, like Misha Barton has cellulite, and then you'll
see pictures of people's families or husbands.
Right, and then on the G4 side, you'll see like a dildo and then a post-it note, Tom Servo, like Jonah made.
That's
you
my
know, it's like it's yeah. that's it's just so funny to see the two like just integrated.
Yeah, the girls from the dish will walk by my office and see like my Mega Man post-it note or my Tom Servo post-it note, and just kind of.
What is that?
What are you doing?
Yeah. That's supposed to be funny.
The East Side doesn't smell like burning tires.
That's true.
It would.
Well, it's weird. It's like, you know, like we were talking about this earlier. We're just like, I walk around and I know when all those, like all the girls at E and Style, they have to dress really well. Like they are required to dress like
part
models.
Of the gig. Sure.
Yeah. Like, and then they see all the guys from G4 and I just know they look at us and go, oh, that's a,
what it's like high school.
It is. And the nerds are, you know,
but
we
it's,
have
it's
real
gotta
jobs.
Be part of the gig at G4 too, that you have to dress like a nerd.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm wearing a Yo Gabba Gabba shirt underneath.
There you go. See,
but not ironically in your case.
Actually. No, I love that show.
And then occasionally Seacrest will come misting out of the walls.
Yes, buddy.
His feet just drag against the ground as he moves. And he says, I've crossed oceans of time to find you, buddy.
So, yeah, buddy.
Seacrest secretes through the walls.
He does. He just sort of wow.
Yeah. Comedy? Yep. That's what he said when he sees Brad and Boyd, our the EPs of Web Soup. He's just like, you guys into comedy? You guys into some comedy?
You gonna do comedy? Comedy jokes?
Comedy jokes?
Yeah, I'm just gonna throw $1 million at your face.
Yeah. Guess what? Because I can.
That's right. I don't miss it, buddy. I don't miss it at all. Are you watching any nerdy stuff right now? I just finished season 3 of Doctor Who, and I fucking can't wrap my mind around how awesome I think that show is.
I jumped off the Doctor Who train a while ago, back when Tom Baker.
Oh yeah,
Doctor
okay. So
Who.
The like classic textbook Doctor
textbook
Who.
Doctor Who. Where
you got to give David Tennant a chance.
Where the it's not for lack of interest, but it was part of my My BBC interest was back in the Doctor Who days. They also had a show called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was, I had read the book first, and when I found that they had a TV show of it, I was blown away because it was it had super cool rudimentary animation in it, which was, I thought, was an excellent way to sort of get the idea of this Hitchhiker's Guide out there. And then that Doctor Who would always follow that, so I had that was my like 2-hour rock block of. Nerdy British comedy.
Well, you know, Douglas Adams, I believe, was a story editor for those Tom Baker Doctor Who episodes, which is probably one of the reasons why.
Well, I'm pretty sure they had the same set designers, too.
Mostly black.
So it's a black room and a couple of boxes. Well, all right, then. Let's shoot it.
Yeah, the Vogons and the... I'm blanking on the bad guy's name in the Doctor Who
Decepticons
world.
No. 80s. 80s. You know, have you ever seen comedy in England before?
You know, I haven't.
It is so... You know, the first time I went to London, I was like, oh my God, here I am, British comedy, home of Monty Python and fucking Chris Morris and all this amazing, brilliant comedy. And then you get there and you realize, like, oh, they're highbrow... America's in between. Their highbrow comedy is more highbrow than our highest brow. And their lowbrow comedy is beyond...
Retarded.
Like, it is so...
Half.
Oh, my God.
Wow. What did he say? No words. No words.
Was that a bit?
I'll just shag this bird in a can.
Applause break. Man, when I first saw stand-up in London, there... And I did stand-up in London. It's a completely different experience because in England, part of the sport of comedy there is the audience trying to derail the comic.
Sure.
And so it creates this insanely aggressive subspecies of comedians where they're just firing at people, and I didn't even understand most of it. They're like, oh, the Australians are here. Those Australians are fucking cunts, aren't they? And everyone's like rolling on the ground. Like, you
they
just
are,
call
though.
Them cunts.
They really
That's
are.
All you. I don't even know. Or you go to the Edinburgh Festival and they're like... and you don't even understand. Not only do you not you can barely understand Scottish comics, but then the references are super regional. Like, where are the Flatlanders at? Oh, you goat huggers! And you're like, goat hugger? What am I doing here?
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. Have you done? Have you done anything over performance wise over in the old UK?
I'm not. I have not spent a lot of time over there.
Are they airing the?
They are airing. I think they're one season behind. And it's fairly popular over there, which is great.
But, when do you start the new season?
The new season we will start shooting in about a month.
Oh, shit.
So the new season will start airing at some point, like August. July, August, somewhere in there.
Nice.
But there was a rumor that they were going to release season 3 DVDs early, because they usually release them like the week before the new season starts to sort of ramp up publicity and piggyback all that stuff. But they were saying that they might release them early. So I don't know. We did all the DVD commentary.
Can catch up. I think that's a better deal.
We did it all. We did all the extras stuff that we had to do. So it's there. It's just at this point, I'm sure, being figured out packaging wise and whatnot.
Are you still shooting downtown?
Mm-hmm.
You were shooting at this.
You want the address of that?
Yeah. You were shooting at this facility downtown, and I went to that facility for a meeting for another production. And all of the offices look like the Mad Men offices, except a lot of them are very run down. So, like, the one that I went to had very similar furniture and the same doors and the same everything, but it was just really, like, oh,
depressing.
No one has bothered to update. Like, it lost a little bit of the charm.
Current TV is over there now.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, like, a lot. So I visit a lot of my friends because I used to work over there, and they get excited because, like, they have Mad Men-style offices.
You know, it's so amazing, and you know, one of my favorite things about just the concept of your show is that, you know, it's on a cable channel that before Mad Men, I don't think that many people were, you know, super aware of, but the fact is, it really needs to. It's just like the rating system for television needs to change, because you know, a show on a small cable channel has permeated the culture so fucking much.
Yeah.
That it just doesn't, like, it's bigger than most network shows.
Well, it seems like there's a different metric at this point for measuring, I don't know, success or cultural impact, which is, I think, what the Nielsens were all about. Like, this is what the cultural impact would be because this many people are watching this particular thing.
When that was just a basic linear formula.
There was
like,
no other way to determine what sort of images or entertainment or you know, consumer goods were being seen by. And honestly, like, the whole reason that television was created was to put something interesting in between the commercials.
To sell dryer sheets.
So that's the reason they measured it, was so that how they would know how to how much to charge the advertisers. And so it is actually changing. The idea of a rating isn't anywhere near as important as it used to be. In fact, they've broken it down so much into demographics and micro demographics and penetration. There was this new
that sounds like a dick thing.
So close to doing something.
Yo. But there was this thing. There was a study that was released last season. It was called like the cultural penetration CPAs, the cultural penetration.
Yeah, CPAs,
accountants.
Yeah.
What? But it was a thing that a advertising agency created because they wanted a more accurate way to determine what to charge their clients. Basically, they were like, "We're not making money on stuff that they're getting a huge benefit out of. We want a new metric to determine what that number is. Make it up. You're a 10, you're a 9, you're a 5, you're a whatever." And our show was like was the top rated cable show in that metric.
Right.
Of like when you thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Well done.
And you're welcome.
It's true, but I'm sure it's very difficult to measure cultural penetration when you have so many different outlets and
it's no more difficult to measure than anything else. I mean, you just have to sort of determine what the metric is.
But I guarantee you the networks are fucking terrified of that.
Well, they're
happening.
Basically saying it's bullshit. Right. Ratings are the only thing that matter because that's really the only thing where they matter.
Yeah. You know, in the way things work today, it makes sense that 1,000 people determine what gets on television. 1,000 people with Nielsen boxes.
Yeah.
It's totally ridiculous. God damn it. Now I'm just mad. Does Vincent Kartheiser ever talk about Angel when he was on Angel at all? Does that ever come up?
It doesn't come up that often.
Hey guys, remember when I was this reminds me when I was an angel. Yeah, Vince, we get it. You were an angel. You were a demon vampire. Good for you.
Not a lot of crossover content-wise in our two shows. Yes.
Now, my last show, yet. I would just walk through a dimension door and then I could just be places. Do you think Pete Campbell could? No.
Vinny, no.
I understand it seems like the show is in the past, but that doesn't mean that you can just walk through time.
No, we can't do that. You need to walk through the door. That's what I'm saying. I walk through the door.
Time door. It's a time door, right?
You open the door.
All right, guys, with my mind.
It's not how Whedon would have done it, but fine. I'd love to see a Joss Whedon-directed Mad Men episode. That would be an interesting... full of...
A musical episode?
a musical... Now, Do you think the show will ever do something weird like that, or is it just too outside that world?
I don't think so. I think, you know, our show could be, in a different iteration, I think it could be sort of a campy, almost winking version of what it is.
Right.
I mean, I think that there's certainly, and many people have attempted that, where they're, you know, sort of parody versions of our show. But we've established, I think, that enough that it is very... for want of a better word, sort of serious in its aspect to sort of fuck around with it in that sense. So I doubt that will ever happen.
Well, I'm writing Mad Men fan fiction. I just hope you. I hope Sally's okay. Well, John Slattery goes into the Dagobah system.
I don't think the sentence "John Slattery goes to the Dagobah system" has ever been uttered in the history of humanity.
You'd be
put
surprised.
Put it in the history book.
Actually, totally right.
Well, let's bring him in. Slattery.
Buble and I were just banging some broads. And it's the worst John Slattery
impression.
That's
a great Slattery impression.
Is that a good one?
I don't know.
So what else is on tap? What else is on tap? What am I? That's such a fucking terrible talk show transition. What else is on tap, John?
What's on the tarmac right now for old John Hamm? Taxing around the runway, any projects?
What's in the old talent closet for John Hamm? Let's open that up and see what falls out on our heads.
No skeletons, I hope, or do we?
Deep. What is some other stuff you're working on?
I will. Shot a movie over the fall with Ben Affleck.
Nice.
That he is directing and starring in, sort of a heist movie.
He strikes me as a guy who would be a pretty good director.
Is it set in Boston?
It's set in Boston. Project Gas.
This guy's from Boston.
Hence the shirt.
Yep.
The Red Sox.
I know you like baseball. That almost disqualified you from being on this podcast.
I know.
Well, that and the fact that you like Dave Matthews Band.
Well,
What would you say?
Oh my God, it's perfect.
Take me out to the ball game for
that's perfect. Yeah, that's it, man. That is
every day.
Take me out for the fern and the wieners.
I saw them at Fenway.
He likes to have fern.
Anyway, are you working on any projects with Dave Matthews?
Are you working on any...
I'm doing the new Dave Matthews biopic. It's very exciting. It's called Under the Table and Dreaming.
That's perfect.
It's just really exciting.
That's what it would be called! That is totally what it would be called!
And I did a thing up in Vancouver with Zack Snyder, who did 300 and The Watchmen, called Sucker Punch.
And the
Punch.
Dawn of the Dead remake.
The Dawn of the Dead remake. it was called Sucker Punch. It's a very strange film that's sort of like Alice in Wonderland with machine guns and samurai swords. And it's that really, really strange.
Say no more.
Now, let me ask you this, because I am certainly not at this point in my career, but what is how does your dynamic change, and how does the pressure change when you go from having to audition for stuff to actually probably having, I mean, I'm assuming people just offer you stuff now. Like, do you get kind of like, oh, I hope this is the right thing? Like, what's that?
Sure.
What's that like? What is that process?
It's very sort of anxiety ridden. And my experience was, you know, kicking around Hollywood forever and not wondering what my next job was going to be and wondering, you know, shit, like, what's rent? Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get to rent next month. So I always think that's one step away. Going back there is one step away. So it's incredibly anxiety-ridden to sort of be like, I'm going to do this one. I hope it doesn't utterly suck and end my career.
Do you think that's possible these days, though, for like a movie to end your career?
I don't know. Honestly, like, I hope not.
Yeah. I don't think so.
I think at this point.
I worked with I did a sitcom years ago. On UPN, maybe it'll come back. I don't know. UPN.
Oopin'.
The up-and-coming network. But this guy who directed the show, who directed a bunch of episodes, directed Bosom Buddies. And so he was there when Tom Hanks blew up. And he said Tom Hanks had this formula that if you had one hit movie, you got three more movies. If any one of those movies was a hit, you got three more movies. But it was like this kind of weird system of threes. But I don't know if that's really...
As much sense as anything. I mean, I think it's one of those things. My decision process, at least, is trying to, at this point, sort of surround myself with people that I respect and think are better than me at most things. And so that's why I chose Zack Snyder, who I'm a huge fan of his work, and Affleck as well. I love Gone Baby Gone. I thought it was amazing. And Jeremy Renner, who's nominated for an Academy Award for Hurt Locker, is in this film with us. And Rebecca Hall, who I love from Vicky Cristina Barcelona, among other things. So it was just like a lot of good people. And I was like, well, that's a good table to sit at. Mm-hmm. I don't think that would be bad for me.
Every story that I've heard about Ben Affleck is that he's just like the nicest, most charming,
funny
guy.
Like wickedly intelligent.
Yeah.
Do you have to use the word wickedly because it's Ben Affleck?
Yeah, you're right. It's sort of a boss.
Dude, you're wicked smart.
And funny. And a good guy to be around. So that's another thing. Like, you don't want to, if you're stuck on location for 2.5 months and you're stuck with some, you know, tyrant that's insecure or freaked out or it's his first job or whatever.
He's not shooting today. He won't come out of the trailer.
Who was more handsome?
Matt, are you okay?
That's how I talk now.
Speaking of new projects, would you be interested in playing the Tom Hanks role in a Burbs remake?
Yes, Burbs 2.
Are they
Burbsier?
Far Burbsier. The Burbs.
Why not fucking remake the Burbs? They're remaking Bill and Ted's, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. They're also,
Burbs is a great
movie. Remaking Arthur.
Yeah. No, you can't remake Arthur! I'm punching the wall!
With Jason Weiner, director of Modern Family. Which makes me have a little hope for it, because I really enjoy Modern
Family. Yes, but it was based on a character that Dudley Moore created. You can't have another like, I'm the son of Alpha.
Do you know who's going to be playing Arthur?
Russell,
this might make it
Russell
very,
Brand.
Russell Brand.
Oh, it's Russell Brand?
Yeah.
I like Russell Brand. Yeah. I just don't know if, like, I don't think we need to, like, just make a movie where he's a happy drunk in another, but don't call it Arthur.
Darthur?
Darth Mauler. It's all Darth Maul is the drunk son of a space billionaire.
It'll be great. It's called Darfur.
Darfur?
People love it. People give so much money to Darfur, they'll get confused and bring
just
it to the movies.
Russell, it's just a little weird.
You're a space hooker? Jesus, I forgot. I'll do great with you.
Of coconuts.
Five people get that reference.
I don't know. It's certainly been fun to get back to the original point. Like, it's way better to not have to audition for things, because auditioning is terrible.
The worst process ever.
I don't know if you read the Steve Martin autobiography, but
oh yes,
he talks about it. He was like, I realized at a certain point that there is no way to get a job that you want through an audition.
I get the audio version of all the Steve Martin books because he reads them.
Yeah.
So bored standing up. Yeah, he looks around the room and he's like, I'm not gonna get this job.
And so that made him go write The Jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're like, well, good for you.
Which still holds up.
Good call. Holds up. Funny.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the Jerk TV series with, one of the guys from Fridays bringing it back, Mark Blankfield.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Blaine Capatch showed me that. Like,
yes,
a clip online.
They did a Jerk TV series where Mark Blankfeld or Field plays, who was on Fridays, plays Nathan Johnson.
Yeah.
And it was not great. I hope Mark does not listen to the podcast. But where it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't his fault.
But that's the thing. That's exactly what we're talking about. That was specifically Steve Martin in
right.
that movie. Yeah. There was no other way that would work, you know, because it was written by him.
You know, they tried to remake Heaven Can Wait.
Yes.
With Chris Rock.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's rarely a good idea anyway, but it's easy because the blueprint's already there.
Well, everything now is just like, we need to present brands that people recognize.
But I don't mind remakes, because like Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead is in my top five favorite zombie movies. It's a great zombie movie, and
But that's rare. He completely reimagined that.
Yeah, he zombies in a mall. That's pretty much all he used.
But his style, like he's so
yeah,
like,
it was great. But I saw The Crazies last night. And The Crazies, although it's not a very good movie, it's way better than George Romero's Crazies, which was horrible. You know?
What about Birdemic?
What?
What about Birdemic?
Birdemic is a...
I'm sitting at home waiting to watch it. Poetry in motion
and CGI. I went to the premiere on Saturday last
week. CGI,
weekend.
Yeah.
That thing was amazing. The guy meant... The director intended it for it to be so good. And now there's like this production company like putting it out with the intention of.
Is that the same guy that did the Shark versus
Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Some dude from like Central California that just spent 4 years.
But that was another movie that enjoyed irony based success.
Yeah.
Which you know is interesting.
Let's put success in quotes.
Yeah. Like The Room is successful.
Yeah.
People go see it every month.
You know, I feel like this type of irony is just like a subculture phenomenon that would not have existed like 20 years ago, or you know, even maybe 10 or 15 years ago. But it's just like internet culture has really brought the whole idea of something being ironically successful to the forefront.
Yeah.
And so, do you enjoy that as an artist? You're like, oh yeah, my movie's successful. Yes, it's successful because everyone thinks it's stupid. Like,
yeah, well, the Q&A afterwards, it's like, you know, because there's a theater full of people yelling at the movie and right. like and laughing throughout it. And Tim and Eric did the Q&A, and Tim asked him, he's like, "What'd you feel about everyone laughing at your movie?" He's like, "Well, people are enjoying it." You know?
I also think like it's gotta have some sort of sensibility of what the guy was meaning to do. If he was meaning to make this super serious thing, and it comes out that it's like American Movie, like
right.
You clearly don't have talent for this,
right?
Your talent is doing something else that you've sort of stumbled into. If you're okay with that, then you're okay with that. But
yeah.
You know that's what things like the internet and YouTube and the incredible explosion of the way to sort of disseminate media is created is like. Really pointing out the flaws in some people's
abilities.
Yes, the internet has no problem pointing out flaws.
Have you ever watched Coven?
No.
The movie they're making, an American movie? It's only 45 minutes long. I fell asleep 3 times trying to watch it. It's a bad movie.
Wow.
It's a bad movie. It is no good.
All I'm saying is I think Mad Men could use some more CGI birds. Just think about it. Just talk to Matthew Weiner.
We had some in the first season.
CGI birds?
Yes, we did.
Which episode?
When
was it called CGI Birds?
It was called Shoot.
Where, oh yes, where Betty
the dog is jumping. Yes. Got one terrible CGI.
And
that's moment.
When you just to nerd out about your show. That's where you really start seeing like, oh, she has cracks in her. She's kind of broken inside. That was a phenomenal.
Sorry.
Hey, when you first get the script for the audition scenes for Mad Men, do you have any idea? Like, do you just have any idea? Even when you get the job, do you have any clue? Like, this is going to, you know, create a whole phenomenon, or did they explain it to you? Oh, we're going to do this stylistically, or did you just think like, it's a drama, we're experimenting?
No. I mean, there's no way. There's so many steps between reading a script and a show being on the air that can be missteps, that can be fucked up somehow. So I read the script and I really liked the script. That's one thing. Okay, so it's a good script. It was, in fact, one of the best scripts I'd ever read. And you see, like, okay, this person's attached to it. This person's going to direct it. This person is going to be involved with it. And they were all people from The Sopranos. It was like, okay, there's another box checked. Like, mm-hmm. I like The Sopranos. These people are talented. I like their work on The Sopranos. And we had the whole crew from The Sopranos. We had the set designer and the costume designer and the hair and makeup and the whole gang. And Alan Taylor, who directed the pilot, was a guy that had directed a million Sopranos. So you had all of these things. And you go, okay, well, that's, you know, it could still suck, or AMC's never released a television show. We don't know if they know what they're doing. They could easily mismarket it or bury it or not, or lose their nerve and not want to pay whatever it costs to truly put it out there and get it out there. And then once I saw the ad campaign, which is that big black and red and white graphic, mm-hmm. that was super arresting and interesting and didn't look like, wasn't a dude's face on a poster with like, look, the 60s.
Right.
Like
a Michael Bublé album cover.
and also like nobody knew who I was. So what's the point of having my face on a thing? You don't know it. Mm-hmm. And it's mysterious and it's cool and it all worked for the thing. So I was like, well, there's another box check. They did that right. And then I saw like the credit sequence that halfway through we're shooting the season, the producer comes up to me and goes, you want to see the credits? I was like, yeah. Oh, this is going to suck.
It's Draper and Sterling and Cooper and advertising. You know how many times I've wanted to do a weird mashup where you guys are having a meeting and then I somehow through technology superimpose Endora hanging up in the top of your... Mad Men.
So, yeah, you know, it's like that. That was another thing. I was like, that's great. They did another great job on that. And then it just, every time they had a chance to make a bad decision or a good decision, it seemed like they made a great decision, which so rarely happens in anything. So at a certain point, and I was always incredibly proud of and happy of the work we were doing and the scripts that were coming in and the stuff we were reading, the story we were telling, that we were like, well, maybe this has a chance to do something. And then once the critics got a hold of it and started gushing about it, you were like, oh, okay. I guess what we think is what other people think, too.
And that's what's amazing. I think I might have said Turner Classic Movies, or I meant AMC. But that's what's so amazing about going to work for a company like AMC is that they're a smaller company. There's not going to be as many people fucking up your project. They're probably excited to have these Sopranos people. And so they're smart enough to go... And this is what I keep. This is what I never understand about networks, big networks. It's like, just let the creative people be creative. Let them do what you've hired them to do.
Yeah, don't bottleneck it.
Yeah, because you know the more people you have getting involved, the more people can fuck it up because they have to justify their jobs. And then I'm sure at AMC they're like, we're just so happy you guys are here. You do what you do, and we'll just put it out.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, at the time. And I still think it's the case. There were four people working in the television development department. I mean, that's they have more executives on, you know, an episode of Two and a Half Men mm-hmm. on one episode. There's 15. I used to do half hour stuff, and you'd go to those run throughs for the network people.
Oh my god!
And there were 40, 50 people sitting in the audience, and you're like, "What?
Well, you do. Yeah, you do. Like you do. You do a studio run through, and then you do a network run through,
and everybody's got a note.
Everyone.
Because if you don't have a note, they're like, "What do you do? Why are you here?"
Yeah.
I worked on a show once where the big note from the head of the network was, UPN, was, what is that guy? Is that an orange sweater? No fucking orange sweaters! Like, he flipped out because, like, an orange sweater fucked him when he was a kid. Now he couldn't have it on a show.
His mother was murdered by an orange sweater.
So you guys
sweater.
Probably don't get that at all anymore of any kind.
You know, the notes are generally very sparingly offered. And when they are, but also, like, the good thing about things like that is, like, when you get a note, it's usually something pertinent or something that is a genuine concern rather than, like, what about, what if we, like, I'm just spitballing.
Don't spitball. Right. Have an idea before
what
you say
about,
it.
What about?
No, just have
I
a clear,
don't know.
Just have a clear thought before
but
you.
But if I said.
No, wait till you know.
Bow tie.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Like, it's just, you know, whatever it is. So it's usually a much more streamlined process, which enables the people that are writing the show and putting the show together to do their jobs much quicker. They're not waiting for people. And we've been just incredibly fortunate. And it's played out in the actual reception of the
but
show.
But that note actually happened with Rich Somers' character, right?
That's how
the boat
Harry Crane.
Yeah,
another great guy. Like, your cast, because I know Christina Hendricks, too. And, like, everyone that I know from your show is so nice and just, like...
Well, I think part of it, too, was, like, none of us were really... any kind of a big deal. Like, we're all just sort of little hacky working actors that were thrilled to have a job, much less a job that has the potential to be something interesting. And everybody has something to do on the show. It's not like there's one guy who's kind of like hauling water for everybody else.
Right.
And it's fulfilling. And so we have this nice, you know, set and this nice group, and everybody's kind of at the same level in their, you know, in their world, so it doesn't feel like, you know, oh my god, I can't talk to him, he's
right.
You know,
first of all, you have to address him by his character's name,
right?
And then, but don't address him.
So, and it's just very, it's a very loose for the seriousness of the stuff we do. Generally, it's a very loose set, and people get along, and it's, we shoot in the summertime, so it's like there's nobody on the lot. It's just us. We feel like we're kind of like broke into, like, the school in off hours and making our little thing. So it's fun.
Well, our hour is just about up, but John Hamm, I mean, funny, charming,
gay,
talented,
gay.
Yeah. Handsome. Can
possibly
I see
playing
your
Dave
balls?
Matthews in a biopic?
But seriously, John, put your balls on the table. I'm just saying.
I think you mean cards. No, do you actually mean balls? Or you don't mean put your cards on the table?
No, I think balls.
Balls? Okay.
I kind of want to see both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's only fair.
I'm looking for one of each.
I mean your balls.
Pinch and roll them.
But I would. Are you going to do? Are there any comedies that are coming down the pipeline? Because I think.
Any comedy follies coming up?
any comedy movies?
I might be working on a film this summer. It'll shoot concurrently with Mad Men, but it's a very small part. So I.
But I definitely think.
Shrek 4.
Shrek 4?
Oh, nice.
Fantastic.
Uh-huh. There you go.
I think when people actually.
That's opening up Tribeca.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Look at there.
Yeah.
We're going to go.
Shrek goes forth, right?
I think you know, when people know you from all the other work that you've done, and then they're going to see you in a comedy and be like, holy fuck, he's really funny. And I think it's, I just see.
Well,
I
hope they don't work blue that way.
A whole other world opening up. You what?
I said, I hope they don't work blue that way.
They will. Oh, fucking fuck. They'll say.
Oh,
why is this person swearing in a theater when we're here to see this John Hamm comedy? I don't understand why they're being such a
dick. I think he's so funny. Fuck.
That's every impulse that comes through my fucking brain. Fuckity fuck.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here to
on
our
the
offices.
Podcast.
We always earn the explicit tag right at the end.
Yeah, like it was fine up until that point, and then
fuck.
We got it. If they're going to tag us with explicit,
listen,
then we're going to
explicit.
Swear.
Yeah. You've been warned.
Yeah, put it on there.
This podcast is pussy. Smells great.
Thanks, Rip Torn.
The end.
Hey guys, it's Chris. Thanks for listening to the Nerdist Podcast number 5 with John Hamm. Well, that royalty-free, smooth vibe jazz music bed can only mean one thing. It's time for live show stand-up plugs. Why? Because performing for no people sucks. So come see me March 11th and 12th at Comics in New York. Also performing will be Jonah Ray from this very podcast and God's Pottery. Also April 5th, we're going to do the first of what will hopefully be our monthly live Nerdist podcast series at Largo in Los Angeles. Our first guest will be Adam Savage of Mythbusters. He's going to perform something, we're going to talk to him, he's going to take questions, and everyone will just hug afterwards for like an hour. Then April 10th, I'll be performing with my best pal Mike Furman at the Showbox at the Market in Seattle. So details on all these shows and more are at Nerdist.com, your one-stop shop for time-wasting nerdity. Thanks for listening. I heart you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.